Pulling up swing
tech show.
Good evening, and welcome to edition number 5 of this little science project we call the Linux Link Tech Show. What we'd like to do real fast here is get everybody that's listening to join up on IRC. You can catch us on IRC at our server, thelinuxlink.net, channel pound tech show. Jump right on, and we'll get to all the good stuff that we have going on tonight. What you're going to hear tonight, hopefully what you're going to hear about tonight, is additions and alternatives to WEP for wireless security, something that we've been meaning to get to for the last couple of weeks now. And then hopefully we're going to be able to get to some talk about the new open office that's out, how the tech show is done, and the blogging software that we have going on right now. But for now, what we'd like to do is take a really short break and get right back at you. Hi folks, this is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or I wonder if they would review my product? Or why don't they talk about this? Or maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have. And perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. And let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also, catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining Channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there. Wow, hi again, everybody. Again, this is episode number 5 of the Linux Link Tech Show, and we just want to say welcome to y'all. My name is Link, and our other host here is Dan. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing all right. Yourself?
Awesome.
You got a better microphone this
time. Yeah, we have better microphones this time. 3 better microphones. And we also have, of course, our man, the almighty mix master, Alan Metzler. How you doing, Alan?
Oh, not too bad. How are you?
Good.
And 3 people.
And yeah, 3 people already.
On the listening to the stream.
Outstanding. That's really cool. And well, hopefully we get some more than
on the chat.
One person on the chat. Well, hopefully we get some more people soon, right? Anyway, this week we wanted to really buckle down and get to some of the things that we haven't been able to talk about for the last couple of weeks because we, you know, generally get too chatty and just never get to it. The first thing was additions and alternatives to WEP for wireless security. And I know this is something that we've gone round for round on before in a couple of shows, different wireless security hints and tips. And this is something, Dan, that you had a few things to mention about, right?
Yes, we'll be talking about that shortly, I believe. Are we starting that topic right now?
Oh, absolutely.
Or would you like to talk about a little news and stuff that's been going on the past week or so?
Little news? What do you have? Anything?
I have. Well, you and I have both been pretty busy.
Oh, yeah.
At at home and at work.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a lot, pretty hectic. I've been working on the website for Southern Lehigh School District. And I'll tell you what, I didn't realize how deficient in graphics, graphic arts and design and image, photo taking and everything I really was. I had our media specialist start working with me yesterday, and he's been a ball breaker almost. He's really on target with pointing out what I can improve on and what I could do better.
They have a media specialist on staff?
He is... the AV guy.
Oh, okay.
But he's also, he has a lot of other talents, video production, graphic arts, stuff like that. So he's been giving me a lot of pointers, tips and pointers, phenomenal pointers. I mean, I think with his help, his name's John Zelenek, wonderful guy, with his help, that we're going to be able to pull something out, taking it to the next level, hopefully very soon. That's already a week overdue.
Well, what do? You have to, are you, like, taking pictures of the kids and stuff to put on the websites and, you know, for little backgrounds and, you know,
somewhat,
stuff that's going on?
The big project right now is the intro, the main page flash animation. I would assume that's what it is. That's what's holding it up. And some of the banner art, which, you know, we've reworked and hopefully made something a lot better than was there before. I'm still waiting on feedback from my supervisor. It's a little bit more than a week late to what exactly she would be looking for. So that's been weighing heavily on my mind the past week. And through this whole process, I've been able to explore more in-depth use of the GIMP and what I can and cannot do, some of the limitations. One of the things I really don't like, and this is not strictly to the GIMP, I use another program called Fireworks by Macromedia. When you take a photo and you want to select a portion of that photo, you could use the square or what's called the rectangle or the elliptical selection tools, or you can do a freeform tool. What you cannot do with the GIMP is once you make that initial selection, you can't move that selection object without either adding, subtracting to it, or actually having to recreate it, which is a real pain in the butt, because if you make that initial thing you don't like it, you got to redo it. Now, Fireworks, you can do that. You can move the selection around. Neither tool allows you to alter the selection, like make the circle selection bigger or smaller. Mm-hmm. You have to redo it. But the GIMP has a Bezier curve selection, which allows you to place points around.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize this today until I read the manual, online manual, phenomenal manual, that when you put those points down, you can actually move those points afterwards.
Oh,
by holding
cool.
down the control key, and you can move them in and out, reposition them.
Guess that shows how much I actually have played with the GIMP lately, right?
Yeah, so that... finding that out made a whole world of difference. Because, you know, before it's like, okay, we place the stuff around, we manipulate the Bezier curves. Doesn't look right, we got to start all over again. Now we can just start moving the points around. You cannot add and subtract points, but once you have them down, you're not limited to where they are. And that was a really cool feature, I thought.
That's cool. And you're doing this development in both... under Linux and Mac OS X, right?
No, predominantly Mac OS X. I'm using a GIMP on top of the X server on OS X. And speaking of OS X, we are 2.5 days, well, actually 2 days away from the release of Panther.
Wow. That would be really cool if I had a Mac. So anyone out there, and what I really want for Christmas... is a nice, brand new, and believe it or not, I do happen to know a piece of information. Just today, Apple has released the G4 iMacs. The G4 Mac PowerBooks. That's what it is. Just today, I saw it on Slashdot. So anybody who's listening who really wants to make a surprise donation to the tech show, that's what you can get me.
G4 or G5?
No, it's G4. G5 isn't out yet on the iBook.
I think it's the upgrades, aren't they?
No, I think these are genuine G4 iBooks. Someone said they came out with a G4 iBook. It's got slot loading CD and DVD drives and all kinds of happy stuff on that. Like they're talking like a 900 something megahertz and a 1 gigahertz G4 iBook, which, you know, of course, is really cool for me. I could really use one of them. Even though I do have to say that my beat up old Dell laptop that I have going on, it's a P2 450 or a P2 400, one of those. Anyway,
you know what?
Running under Linux, it runs pretty good.
You should see on the chat server, your wife has said, if anyone is seeing me type this, Link needs more computers.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot more computers. Now, you know what? The iBook, right? They released the G4 iBook because they already have the G4 PowerBook out.
Right, it's the iBook.
The iBook.
It's
right.
The
iBook.
I'm sitting right.
Thinking, wait a minute, I have a G4.
No, it's PowerBook. The iBook. Like the this Snow iBook
right.
series that they have going on now.
Right.
Not the little toilet seat ones. Hey, you know, I would even be interested.
They don't make those toilet seats anymore.
I don't think they do either, but they have two generations of the toilet seat ones, and I would even be cool with a toilet seat iBook. So anybody that has like a spare toilet seat iBook that wants to, you know, loan it for some demo work or whatever, by all means, contact us.
You know, it was interesting that when Mac started coming out with different case designs and different colors at the PC market. Followed in suit, but now the PC market has taken it to the next level with modded cases. You said
and
your
Mac
neighbor.
Went back to the steel gray case, right?
Steel gray case. Yeah, I haven't seen a Mac with a
titanium.
Yeah, with a
titanium.
It's a nice case, though.
It is.
Really is.
I haven't seen a Mac with a translucent panel on it, though. Well, no, you're right. That's not right. They do have kind of translucent sides to some of them, particularly the iMacs. But what your neighbor got a PC or a friend of yours got a PC with a window on the
side.
Oh
yeah,
guy
neon built
highlight.
A PC for. He got and this guy is not like, you know, this is an older gentleman, right? And the only thing he uses his PC for is, I don't know, getting on AOL and getting his email or whatever, and his granddaughter gets on there. And he comes to me and he wants me to build this PC for him. He bought a new case. It's one of these Ricer Modder kind of cases, you know. It's all fancy. It's got these two glowing columns of LEDs in the front of the case that change colors and little bubbles in them and kind of crap. And, you know, it's got a LCD display with a temperature in the front of it. And this big honking window on the side so you can look in there and see that there's absolutely nothing inside this computer, you know. It was just a riot. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Because it's got a whole bunch of, you know, it's got all bunch of fan grids and stuff in the back with no fans in it, of course, because they don't give them to you with the case. But so pretty much you can see it suck in all this dog hair and stuff from his house. And I'll get a kickback on it when he needs it clean every now and then when he looks inside.
Now, when you set a case like that up, are the neon lights inside pre-connected, or is there like little? You just plug them into a part of the case.
They're part of the case, and pulling out from the front panel of the case, there's just a little, you know, like a regular power connector for a drive, and you just, you know, it's a Y adapter. You plug it in and keep going along as you go.
Another thing to suck up your power.
Oh, absolutely.
Between that, you put a new graphics card in there. You need to run three fans for that graphics card alone.
Oh, sure.
That needs its own power supply.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was just, I mean, I just thought it was funny. Here's like, you know, here's like a 60-some-odd-year-old man with this little Ricer, you know, this Ricer case thing going on with the little, you know, the little glowing lights in the front and stuff. My daughter thought it was cooler than hell. And my wife took a look at it. She said, that's kind of neat, but it would drive me insane, you know, sitting on the desk.
Well, he looks good surfing AOL.
Right.
And speaking of an AOL client, I didn't know they had a client for Linux.
Yes, they do.
But I didn't know you installed
just AIM.
It.
Just AIM.
No, I mean, how is your friend running AOL on top of Linux?
He's not running it on top of Linux. He's running Windows 2000.
Shameful. Shameful, shameful, shameful.
Hey, he paid me to do it, man. I don't know.
I tried.
I really did give it a shot trying to get him on, get him hooked up with Linux. One of the problems he's having is, I guess his granddaughter is hanging out over there, And she keeps getting on these chat rooms and stuff in AOL and downloading, like, viruses and things. And he keeps getting... She gets in on the chat room and she'll get kick banned or something like that for whatever reason. And they'll like, terminate his account for terms of service or something. They'll have to go back in and beg him to, you know, get back on. And I said, you know, if you just let me put Linux on that thing, then you wouldn't have this problem. But I guess it's one of the other things he has is some kind of legacy map application and stuff like that that he wants to use.
Did you give it back to him with a NOPIX CD?
I should have done. I probably can give him a NOPIX CD. And yeah, hooray, NOPIX.
Now,
good stuff.
Why haven't you convinced him to switch from AOL? AOL is an incredible expense compared to a local ISP.
I can't get him to switch, man. It's just ease of use thing. You know what I mean? It's just... I wish I could. I can't even... You know, there isn't even a good reason, you know, anymore.
I don't know that AOL. That's something. You could add AOL to your broadband service, too, Link.
You could.
You should
I'm not gonna. I already had my go-around with those people. I'm not doing that anymore. No way.
That's just an incredible amount of money.
It is.
An incredible amount of money.
And you don't get... I mean, you really get... You know, here's a message to you, AOL. You suck. You get really poor, and I can tell you that unequivocally from firsthand experience because I did have an AOL account for a long time, and you really get poor service. And I am much, much happier with the. I have a national ISP now, but I'm much, much happier with them. Verizon, by the way. Which, although they do not actively support Linux, I run Linux at home and I never have a problem. So, by all means, check them out.
You and your Microsoft operator Verizon.
No. You do not have to run Microsoft products to use Verizon service. They've been real good to me. Much better than AOL did with their double billing practices and... You know, overcharging, and like when I canceled my account, they kept billing me for 3 months and all that other happy crap. Stay away from them, you know, if at all possible. But I do understand why a lot of people do use them because it's very, very easy for them to get connected. I mean, AOL floods them. You can even go to a convenience store now to pick up a sandwich or something without seeing a stack of AOL CDs on the counter. You know what I mean? They have them at Blockbuster. They got them at the grocery stores. You just can't get around the stuff. And, you know, when they're offering these people 45 days or something like that of free access, you know, what are they going to do? They just get suckered in, and there they go. They don't know any better.
Back in the day, Windows 95, 3.1, probably 95, didn't it, when you automatically started it up and you tried to get on the Internet, before you could set it up for your own internet service provider, it would ask you if you wanted to sign up with an AOL account. And they've since switched that over to MSN. Didn't that used to come up and say, do you want to sign up for an AOL account? Or
I have no idea.
You know, use an existing account. Now they ask if you want to sign up for an MSN, or you have an existing MSN account, or... You know, is this
not
something?
A clue.
I don't know. Since I've left the Windows world from my home, I haven't had the opportunity to set up a dial-up account on a Windows machine in a long, long time.
Well, with the days of, you know, the days of high-speed internet now, it's getting far and few between where I've actually had to go anywhere and use... I mean, I have a dial-up account that I keep active from work, and I can't tell you the last time that I actually used it. In fact, I don't even have the software on my laptop to use it anymore. I'm always, you know, hitting broadband somewhere or another.
You know, next time I'm setting a machine up at work, even if you do have direct connection to the Internet, you still have to go through Internet Explorer and tell it, I want to use a direct connection to the internet, not
right.
whatever those other two options are.
Right.
Now, Alan's a big Microsoft man, and
oh,
he should
absolutely.
Be chiming in right now, telling us exactly what those options are. Because you have your, what, MSN? DA?
No.
Certification?
No, I'll leave myself as being strictly an operator. But
Link's on his way to becoming Microsoft SQL certified.
No.
From work.
No. Link is not going to become Microsoft certified. I really don't see any reason to become Microsoft certified, and I'll tell you why. I have worked with a plethora of Microsoft certified professional people, none of which has known how to do anything. In particular, one guy who was a certified engineer, and he couldn't manage to change directories in DOS, and that just floored me. I never even could imagine something like that. But I've worked with a lot of people like that, and I really just give up with that kind of certification stuff. To me, it means absolutely nothing. I would rather have some practical experience, you know?
Were you the one who used to collect AOL CDs?
No.
I guess not. Because Moondog brought up about the coasters and tins for CDs. What's nice, though, is AOL sends them out in those DVD cases now.
Yes.
And you can put...
Those are cool, because I've actually had a couple of broken DVD cases, and you just swap them out. And the worst part is getting the AOL sticker off the back. But, thanks, AOL, because I just happened to need it at the time. So, by all means, send me your stuff, and I can always use a spare coaster or Frisbee. Or, what's really cool is you take them to the shooting range, and they make really great targets for a shotgun.
You know what I find interesting? That AOL can afford to send out all these discs, just blanket the entire country with these damn discs. But you think about it, they don't make near as much money as Microsoft, and wouldn't it be in Microsoft's best interest to send out a CD every month or every couple of months with all their patches and updates on them?
It would be in Microsoft's best interests. No, actually, it wouldn't be in Microsoft's best interest.
Microsoft users' best interest.
Yeah, and their users definitely, but not the company. Because I have this kind of philosophy about Microsoft, and that I really think that the reason their operating system is so bad is it's on purpose. You know what I mean? It's a conspiracy theory of mine, right? Just like car manufacturers now. You know that car manufacturers manufacture parts so that they break down after a certain number of miles. Everybody knows that. And you can always tell, because if you buy a new car now, as soon as the damn warranty goes through, what happens? Your car breaks down, right? They know how many miles it's going to take for the car to break down, so they set the warranty accordingly. And I really think that Microsoft does the same thing. I think that they build their products so that they are inherently buggy and are prone to bad security, and then they can and they even look good by putting up updates and security patches. But see, the trick is with their security patches is that, like with this last email outbreak, they had the patch, but you couldn't get it. You couldn't get it. It took 57 hours. Or the patch is so damn big that you're on a dial-up connection. Takes 57 hours to download. What good is that? So you can't get it. You can't patch it. What do you do? The very next time Microsoft comes out with a new product, you go buy that, because that has the patches in it. So it's a methodology to get people to keep upgrading and keep spending money on Microsoft.
Yeah, because I rush right out when Microsoft releases a product so I can get the patches.
I bet you do, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, all their new products are affected.
Right.
Yes.
Right, but they keep touting them as better, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like this new They just, was it just today or maybe yesterday, they released the newest version of Office or something like that? I think it was just today they just released a new version of Office.
They did?
And
where have I been?
I don't know. But I just, you know, I pay attention to Slashdot and some other sites and check it out. But evidently, this thing is supposed to have
it's
all of these.
Office 2003 now.
Office 2003. There you go. And evidently, they have all of these fixes and stuff and patches in it that are supposed to fix the holes in the email and stuff when you used to send documents through Office 2000. Office 2000, right? Was the last one?
No. Yeah. No. There was something after Office 2000.
Was there? I don't know.
Office XP.
Office XP. Okay. Well, at any rate, it's supposed to take care of some of the inherent security problems with the last few Office products that they had.
Weak Office Server 2000.
Yeah. But so you know, it's just like I said, it's another money making ploy for them. They're touting this thing as the next best thing to help your security and all the problems that they have. Notice they don't release a new version of their email software, which is like the worst god-awful thing on the planet. But they give you new Office software because, you know.
Well, didn't they further integrate their
everything better?
The rest of their Office products with their with Outlook?
I really don't know. I use
Share Portal Services supposed to bank on
something
$30,000.
Oh yeah, that's right. $30,000 for their what was a 5-user license or something like that, right? But I don't know. I don't know. I don't use their products. I don't like it pretty much because I'm a cheap bastard and I don't like to spend any money if I don't have to. And you know, the Linux stuff and the open source stuff just happens to run a lot better, my personal opinion.
We should probably move on to wireless security alternatives before we get too caught up in all this other stuff and pass it off for another week.
Right.
I look at this link as an ongoing series of articles and updates that we could talk about for the next 20 tech shows.
Sure.
Keeping that in mind, the extent of my research involved about an hour before
before the show.
Because I was so busy with other things this week. But I just did a quick look out there. Some of the references I used are on, of course, the reference section of the Linux Link Tech Show website. We did update it for this week. When you get a wireless access device, usually by default it's insecure. Out of the box, there's pretty much no security, and you must configure the security for yourself. If it runs SNMP, it probably has a community default. Public words have been set, which means that you're wide open right out of the box. That's the way that they're delivered.
Right, that's the way mine was delivered. Sure, you plug it in, it grabs an address, and well, that's of course mine was a router, but you know.
Right, but you drive around here. We're driving around here. You can find a ton of Linksys boxes. The first levels of security that they go with is the server set ID. Pretty much, they all have a server set ID by default.
Right,
and essentially, what you can set it to is that the access point and the client must be using the same server-side ID. That's a possibility. Now, it's very weak because it's susceptible to brute force attacks and sniffing, of course. But you can encrypt it with wired equivalent.
That's just that you're just
protection.
Talking about the name, right?
Like
the
Linksys.
Yeah, the
right.
Linksys boxes all
it's
come
a unique
with an
name.
SSID of Linksys. And yeah, I get you.
Now, you can have it not broadcast, but someone could still pull it out with a sniffer.
Sure.
So if someone wants to connect, you're not broadcasting it. They'd actually have to know what that SSID is. Now, you can encrypt it with WEP, but we talked about wireless equivalent privacy a couple shows ago, some of the flaws, that there's no managed key space system. There's a clear text initialization vector wherein part of that key is sent.
Mm-hmm.
The initialization vector is too small, which means even though there's some randomization in there, it's possible for duplication within a short period of time
right.
that someone could actually crack your network, your web keys. And it suffers the same problems as basic passwords do with people not using, with people using dictionary-based passwords, stuff that's familiar to them, like their pet's name, their kid's name, or the street they live on. So we said web really isn't the greatest idea. One of the protocols that are coming down the line, actually it's been adopted as a standard in June 2001, but it's not really in wide use yet, is 802.1x. Now 802.1x has built-in key management, which allows the keys to be changed rapidly and shared amongst the clients. There's still some security issues with it, but basically it used what's called extensible authentication protocol, which in itself allows for a wider variety of security methods. You could use smart cards, certificates, token cards, one-time passwords. But what extensible authentication protocol does is it's not a cipher like WEP. It wouldn't encrypt anything.
Right.
Its focus is only on authentication and key management. But what it permits the use of other security measures underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can put in a RADIUS server. Now, again, a RADIUS server is something that provides authentication, authorization, and accounting to your network via a designated RADIUS server. There's some security at the application layer, but, you know, again, we're still not talking about an necessarily an encrypted type of communication back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
What you might want to use then at that point, particularly on a client and server end, would be a virtual private network or a VPN-type connection. One of them that I was looking at was PP, point-to-point protocol. You can set up a server to communicate between your client access. Set up a VPN for various operating systems.
Right.
Communicate through that wireless access point. Now, 802.1x will allow that type of communication to go through a lot easier than any other security standard that's being implemented on the access points right now. And what's nice about 802.1x is that it has very little overhead, and that existing devices, just for a firmware change, would all that be required, and it's not going to increase any overhead for an 802.11 compared to an 802, what is it, 11G?
Right, 11G is
per
is
gigabit.
New
11B, 11G. You're not going to notice any overhead. So that's nice to be able to, when that standard actually gets adopted in a wider basis. You had talked about MAC address filtering.
Yes.
That's another way to secure.
That's what I use myself, actually.
Yeah, one of the downsides is, compared to other types of security, like the WEP and everything, MAC address filtering is a little more difficult to implement because it requires more in-depth knowledge of how to implement this type of protocol. It's not as easy as just putting a key in. You got to actually get the MAC address of the client device that you want to allow connect.
Well, sure, but you know, every time I see one, they have them listed like right on the bottom of the, either on the bottom of the appliance or on the bottom of the network card.
Well, if your network card's in a machine, you'd have to pull out the machine. Card out of the machine to find out the MAC, unless
probably,
you...
Probably, yeah, but wouldn't you just, like, look at the damn thing before you put it in the machine?
It's true, it is, but again, that requires a little more research than just, you know, a shared key.
Yeah, I guess it could.
I mean, it's
and
not...
it does require more, more intervention on the part of the administrator, because every time you want to do, you know, you physically have to go and log into the wireless appliance and go in and add the new MAC address in that you want to be able to be allowed and the whole, you know, the whole business with that.
See, doing that MAC address for you and me is fairly easy.
Mm-hmm.
But you got Alan here, comes home with his wireless access point, he pops it in, he's like, what's a MAC address? A big MAC address? McDonald's is down the street.
Right, yeah.
You know, you talk about Joe Schmo, average user, would have no idea what a MAC address is or how to get that MAC address pretty much unless they were kind of instructed.
Right.
I mean, it's not hard to get the MAC address.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they say it's a little more difficult to implement than a shared key type thing. Now, one of the downsides with the MAC address, though, is it's still, the MAC address is still sent in clear text.
Yes, it is.
Over a wireless, and
you
someone
can,
with a sniffer can pull it out.
You can fake a MAC address. Yes, you can.
Now, to catch, not so much as to catch sniffers and war drivers or war flyers or whatever, to kind of confuse them a little bit, some companies, some make products called are honeypots.
Right.
Fake access points.
Mm-hmm.
That's, and of course, that's nothing more than a device that's a little more open than your network would be to kind of pull them in there and hopefully stop them from looking around even deeper.
Sure, and they have some, I seem to recall when I was initially setting up my wireless stuff on my laptop, I seem to recall reading something about some programs that they had that used your wireless card to make some kind of a honeypot looking wireless device, or it looks like there's a whole bunch of wireless access points where there's only really one or something like that. It's a whole bunch of really neat stuff going out there.
Yes, a lot of cool stuff. Now, what some of the documentation recommended on the client end for security, if you really, really want to watch what's going on, is first off a firewall. Because basically, compared to a wired network, your wireless network is not going to be anywhere near as secure. So you want to firewall your workstation.
Well, are they talking about firewall in between your wireless and wired network? Or
right. Well, even in between your client and the rest of the wireless network.
Okay.
Someone
mm-hmm.
jumping on. Using some type of virtual private network.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to use the PTDN.
Secure PTDN shell,
or
people.
Or secure shell. Or, you know, whatever VPN software you would like to use.
Yeah, Secure Shell.
And also
stuff.
Put on some kind of intrusion detection software in case, you know, like Port Sentry, Tripwire, that would be able to detect whether somebody's trying to do something malicious or
Absolutely,
somebody
yep.
has already gotten in and maybe altered a file.
Well, how about this for a suggestion, though? Why don't, if you're going to run a wireless access point, or if you're going to run, you know, some kind of a network system in your home, why don't you just be responsible enough to take a look at it every now and then and find out if there's someone on it? Check your log files. You know, be an administrator of your home system. Or the alternative is just to go free and let everybody do whatever the hell they want on it. Right? And pretty much you get what you pay for. If you put the time in to set something up, some method of security, then you're at least a step better than most of the people I've seen. And it's, like you said, Dan, you've been war driving around, and there's a whole bunch of wide-open networks, right?
Oh, yeah. I was at a meeting a couple weeks back where I needed to pull some stuff down off the web, so I got in my car and drove down the road, found a wireless access point that was open, hopped on, got what I needed, and came back. It's a beautiful thing, these cable and DSL connections in people's houses.
Absolutely. And if, you know, I absolutely feel like, you know, if you're leaving that hanging open like that, then you probably mean for somebody to use it. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think you really. Most people probably don't even have a clue.
Yeah,
you know?
But you just can't think like a wireless phone, right? How many people do you know that have a wireless phone? Like a cordless in their house. Like just about everybody has a cordless phone in their house. Now, if they took that cordless phone and left it outside on the curb on the roadside, don't you think someone would pick it up and use it? Probably. You know, that's pretty much a given. Or even how about this? If you have a cordless phone, does it work outside your house? Everybody's going to say, yeah, it works outside my house. Well, 802.11b runs on the same, you know, runs on the same band megahertz that these cordless phones run on. And if you can go outside your house and call you know, with your 900 megahertz cordless phone, you can certainly go outside your house and use your laptop on your 900 megahertz 802.11b Wi-Fi setup. You know what I mean? And if you can do that and there's no authentication method, obviously everybody else is going to be able to as well. Unless you live in a Faraday cage, but I don't want to get too technical for some of the people, you know what I mean?
You said that you have some information
about
wireless that you wanted to cover.
I do. What I wanted to do, and I actually made a slight effort to be prepared today so that I could understand what you were talking about and look a little bit more intelligent. It doesn't happen very often. But I remembered, since you said we were talking about this Wi-Fi alternatives or WEP alternatives, I remember seeing in a back issue of the Linux Journal, which, of course, is the de facto standard wonderful Linux magazine that everybody must get if they run Linux. In the... What issue is it, man? In the September 2003 issue, on page 52, it talks about just this sort of thing, and it's talking about... The heading on the magazine is Linux-powered wireless hotspots, and it's NOCAT auth that they're talking about. And basically, I'm not going to be able to give you a whole lot of information on it right now, but you can check it out for yourself. You want to go to their website is www.nocat.net, and the software package is NOCAT auth. And what these folks did was they made a little software package that uses IP tables and authentication set up through what looks like a proxy server sort of setup. And basically, you connect to the wireless access point, and that connection is free, but you can't get out of that wireless access point area out to the internet until you pass the authentication set up by this NOCAT auth program. And it just sounds like a really neat idea, and I'd love to try it myself, but I haven't had the time yet. So if anybody out there listening has done this, by all means, let me know. I'd love to hear how well it works. In the interim, maybe I'll get to try it myself. But check it out again. The website is nocat.net, and their software package, which is pretty much plastered all over the web page, is NOCAT auth. Check it out.
I think that pretty much sums up our wireless security for this week. Next week, maybe we'll look at, or in the future, we'll look at some vendor-specific stuff.
Sure.
Some more wireless security. There's a whole lot that's going on out there in this field. We can get far more in-depth than what we've touched on.
Stuff changes every day, yeah.
Right, and it's a growing field because everybody wants wireless. Everybody wants Bluetooth. No, they want wireless.
Right.
Bluetooth. Bluetooth's a whole other issue.
We want Bluetooth headphones here. Bluetooth. That's another thing. Support the Linux Link Tech Show. Bluetooth headphones.
But anyway. One of the guys at work just came in bragging he got a wireless keyboard and mouse. He said, I was thinking about getting a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, but that was $130 or something. Like, $130 for a stinking keyboard. That's not right.
Well, just like the wireless, wireless is just, he's talking infrared, right?
No, I think it's the one that operates on a frequency, a radio frequency.
Really? RF?
Maybe. I don't know.
Those cheap ones are like $40 or $50, right, for the set. That's pretty expensive, man. And then you still have to have some kind of, yeah, right. Me too. Any old beat up thing I can find the side of the road. But yeah, man, that stuff is just a little pricey for me now. Maybe someday though.
When it's standard and
right, when it's standard and they're throwing them away at work, then I'll have me a set. Oh yes, sir.
Then you won't have to type; you'll just think, and it'll go right into the computer.
Exactly, they're just jacking it in the side
away
of my
on
head.
Your computer keyboard.
That's what they need. They need to have like some little plastic sheet of paper looking grid thing with keyboard letters on it. You could just flap on your desk and bang on it. You know?
They actually have one of those.
Do they really?
Right.
I'm not talking about like the roll-up keyboards. I'm talking like a little thin Mylar sheet kind of deal that you can beat on.
I think
it's the only way I'll ever be able to keep a keyboard for more than 2 months because I beat the hell out of my keyboards because I started computing when my first computer was a VIC-20, and you really had to. I mean, you had to have elephantitis of the finger to get some of those keys to work. You know, you really had to pound the hell out of them. And it just, like, carried through, and I continually go through keyboard. Not to mention that some people in my household, whom I will not mention, tend to eat over my computer keyboard and frustrate me to death. And I have to bang the potato chip pieces and sandwich pieces and whatever out of my keyboard. And
that's why you need an office in your own separate room.
I need an office with a big locked door and a, you know, a robot with laser beams or something to keep them. I don't know. I'll work on that someday. Yeah, robot with laser beams, yeah.
They have the keyboards now that are just, they're keyboardless. I don't know what the word is, but they...
The keyboards that are keyboardless.
Yeah, it's just...
Now that's some technology right there.
They have a little laser light that shines the keys down on a table.
Oh, now that would be cool.
You just type, but there's no keyboard there. You just type in where the laser light is.
Yeah, but you lose all kind of tactile feel there, right?
Well, what's the difference between that and a Mylar sheet, then?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they could make it a little spongy or something, but, you know...
Like wet tissue.
Something like that.
Why don't we take a break and allow...
Let's take a break.
The wonderful song we have from Neuro Disney called Feel the Pain at our intermission that's a little over intermission time. So we're going to take a little break, about 3.5 minutes, I believe it is.
4.01, I think.
4.01 minutes. Neuro Disney...
Feel the pain.
We pulled it off of openmusic.org. Was that it?
Yes, it is.
Check them out. Well, speaking of that, Link drew my attention today to the fact that Tangentile Cold actually posted on our blog a thank you for playing their song and also referencing them, not only in our blog, but on our show, that it was their song that we played.
Yes, indeed.
And that was pretty nice. I'm really glad.
And if they listen to us again, you know, by all means, we would like to play more of your music. Unfortunately, we can't figure out how to get it off your webpage now because your webpage changed. So
we're going to play some Neuro Disney, Feel the Pain, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Feel the Pain. We'll be right back.
Well, that was a pleasant escape from the usual mellow music we've been playing.
Yeah.
That awakes some people.
Nothing
up.
Like that old Duran Duran and Culture Club.
Right. Wow, we've been running really up to the mark here. We've only got about 10 minutes.
Yes, indeed.
And
well,
I was thinking we should probably keep it to a half an hour, 45 minutes.
Right! This is because of our infernal yakking back and forth.
That 10 minutes means we actually have 25. Because we got a captive audience now. They don't want to
Sure,
wait.
Yeah. No, we got them going with the hard metal stuff, so
yeah.
Might as well just keep them listening.
We're going to... We touched base a little bit about Open Office last week, didn't we?
Just barely. It was a barely a mention kind of thing.
I got to say, the new Open Office 1.1.3, I think it is, 1.1 Release Candidate 3. Or
I think so, yeah.
I love it, man. It runs so much faster, starts up so much faster than the old one. I really like the PDF export right up.
That's cool. That is definitely cool. Yep.
I also like the Macromedia Flash export, although we were playing with that before the show, and unfortunately when you create a presentation it doesn't animate or allow the Flash export
right,
to allow
it's just doing a flash the screen kind of
right,
it just changes to the next slide kind of thing. Yeah.
It still looks really pretty.
Yeah,
looks
yeah,
really
yeah,
nice.
It does.
I mean, they did a phenomenal job with SFR, so I'm hoping someday soon in the future it will support some animation. So I was thinking, man, if it supports animation, and even though it doesn't, I'm still probably going to do this. I'm going to go in. We have to do training sessions at work for the teachers.
Right.
And mine all have to be pretty much based around the web and getting content on the web. I think what I'm going to do is a short half an hour training on how to use OpenOffice to convert your PowerPoint presentations into a format for the web that is viewable by anybody. Because you can create
sure.
the PowerPoint presentation, put it up on the web, and those people that have Internet Explorer and a Windows operating system, I'm not sure if it's available.
You mean like
Mac.
Through PowerPoint, right? If they export it, you can only run it on Internet Explorer. And
well, if they export, there's a way you can publish it to the web in PowerPoint, but it requires the PowerPoint plugin,
mm-hmm.
which you need to have Internet Explorer, and I don't know if it's available for the Mac, that plug-in. Or if you're running Linux, you could do the crossover Office.
Right.
But why bother? Now, I've also tried their HTML export, and I found it really poor
mm-hmm.
and problematic. But I take a PowerPoint presentation over in OpenOffice, and I can put it into an HTML format that anybody can read
right.
and view, and it's beautiful.
Right.
And now, with the Flash export, anybody, again, can read that quite beautifully.
Sure.
So, you know, you got to figure, what, Office?
Plus, they're just a regular document creation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they want to do a just a general web page kind of thing, you can, you know, open up OpenOffice in the writer and write your text in and drag your pictures in and put them where you want and tables and graphs and whatever the hell and export it to HTML. And it looks just fine, you know?
Well, yeah, everything. OpenOffice, you got to think. Microsoft Office, what? $400, $500,
mm-hmm.
well, actually $700, I think, for the full, to get the comparable amount of applications and products that you get in OpenOffice with Microsoft Office.
But you can't do that because, of course, if you want the comparable product, you would need a Microsoft Office that actually does not crash.
Well,
and
that
is impossible to get.
What you don't get with OpenOffice anymore is I don't think you get an email client and kind of personal information manager. That's not available in Open. They used to have that
they
in
Star Office.
They used
to have that in Star Office. You probably can get it in Star Office if you're really hurting for something like that.
But who needs
Plus
that?
You get... Well, you know what? In all fairness, I'm going to say, you know, if you're really humping for a good Office package and you think that you must spend money to get one, do yourself a favor and get Star Office because they do have... they do have a few more filters and stuff, and a little bit better methodology of importing document files from Microsoft. So, you know, if that's something you're really into, I think it's what, $50, $60 or something like that? It's not even that much.
Yeah.
Star Office.
It's under $100.
Yeah, it's way under $100. And everybody I have talked to that actually bought that absolutely raves about it and says that's the coolest thing. Now, if you really don't want to spend the money, hey, you don't have to, because there's a great open source project that's just like Star Office, or very, very similar. And that's OpenOffice. And the only differences are, like I said, there was maybe a couple email things. I don't even know. I haven't used the email thing out of it.
I haven't used the Star Office in a long time, but I know they strip out some third-party software.
They did. Some kind of database stuff.
But there is database connectivity to a wide variety of databases. And somebody in the Luggage said it used to be a read-only type access, but I think it's now a write type access. I could be wrong, because it allows you
really,
to
you can,
get in there and do the tables.
You can write to an SQL
we'll
database.
We'll have to try it. One of these
yeah,
days.
We'll have to check it out.
Maybe for next tech show, we'll do that. See, but we just thought we'd give a mention. The only downside, another downside, is the version 1.03 or 1.103 has not been released for OS X yet.
Oh,
yeah.
Be still, my bleeding heart.
That's important.
It runs just fine on my crappy laptop.
It runs fine on my laptop, too. I want the latest, greatest.
Just because I can't, you know, run. I would be happy running any version of OpenOffice on my nice PowerBook, Dan. Unfortunately, I don't have a nice PowerBook to run it on, you know.
Link. I don't mean to interrupt Open Office, because it's a very important topic. We actually have a question from the IRC I think we should address.
Oh, we do.
Is there any video
oh, my goodness, we do
editing applications or programs? And yes, there are. And did we talk about this at our first show? Wasn't our first show about our... Or was that the blogs?
I think it was the blogs we were talking about.
The video editing. Yeah, there are a handful of video editing applications.
It was the blogs. I get the address for you. Keep talking.
Now, I'll put a little addendum to that, in that if you are using digital video, you have a digital camcorder through a FireWire card, you are a step ahead of the game, because the digital video capture is the most difficult part of the video editing, I think. There are a handful of programs, Cinelera, which used to be called Broadcast 2000, there's Linux Video Studio. There's Main Actor, Kino, and I think there's a few others that we're missing. Why are they eluding me now? I don't know. But there's a handful of video editing applications. Now, if you're using, like what I have, a capture card, and we've gone through all sorts of hell trying to get video off a capture card.
You get video off it, not bad. You just can't get any audio with it. That's the problem.
Yeah, getting a video and audio together off of an analog source is very difficult. And then to be able to put it in a format that you can actually edit it is just as difficult, it seems. Again, like I said, Cinelera and Main Actor seem to be about the top of the line that you're going to get for video editing and using those type of devices to capture the video. Unfortunately, with Main Actor, you're looking at $299 for the Linux version. But Cinelera is free. Free software. So was Broadcast 2000. But it has some pretty heavy requirements. I think they're talking a minimum of a gigahertz Athlon processor.
Oh, yeah.
They preferably, it's a dual processor.
Didn't they have, like, Video GIMP or something like that, too?
Yeah, Film GIMP, but that's
Film
more
GIMP,
for
yeah,
touch-up.
Yeah. Okay.
That's not actual video editing. Now, on the digital end of things, there's an application called Kino that will pull in digital video and allow you to do some basic editing with it, and has some effects.
But then, of course, you got to have digital video.
Yeah, you're going to need the digital video. You're going to need the FireWire and all that rigmarole to get that video in there. And supposedly, from what I hear, that works great. I'm just waiting for my mother-in-law to buy me a digital camcorder or something that I could actually test this out on. So the best bet, I think, is Kino. And, man, we were just talking about this a little while ago. Patrick Davila on our lug list was asking about what application to use. And he brought up another one, and I can't for the life of me remember what it is. Let me consult Alan, and you could talk about your video editing. Your whole TV.
I don't have a video editing, but actually, what we should do at this point let me give you the link real quick first. I found a link in Dan's blog, which has his experiences and my experiences with video editing. And you're going to find that at http://thelinuxlink.net/blog/archives/00004.html. You're going to find all kinds of nifty information there. But what we should do at this point in time, we're running over time again.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Let me just interject with some more Linux video stuff.
All right, Linux video.
Important stuff. Linux format about 2 months ago,
mm-hmm.
and I wish I had it in front of me, but since I rearranged the room, it's in one of these boxes, had a nice overview of the Linux video editing software that's available
mm-hmm.
out there. So check that out. I don't think it's on the new shelves anymore, but you could probably find it by going to their website. And the Linux Format is the United Kingdom's best-selling Linux magazine.
It's a good magazine, too.
It is. It's a little pricey, though. You're looking at, what, $13.99?
Yeah, but that's because it always comes with, like, a CD or a DVD or some kind of stuff.
Well,
like
even
that,
without
right?
the DVD, you're looking at $9.
Yeah.
So you're paying import prices, but an excellent magazine. The website's www.linuxformat.co.uk. Check that out. They just ran something about Linux video editing. We'll do some more, an update to that next week, and provide some more information. I'll do a little more research. There's another utility called MJPEG Tools, but we won't get into that now because we are running out of time. But we'll definitely cover that because Patrick also wanted us to cover
yes, indeed.
Linux video mm-hmm. editing. So we were able to get through two things this week.
Mm-hmm.
And next week, we're going to have to
We're getting bad, man. We usually go through like 4 topics out of our 8-topic list.
Well, we should
now
have done that.
We have 5 topics, and we only get through 2.
That complete diversion in the front there, in the beginning. But you wanted to talk about how we do the tech show. You were gung-ho about getting some pictures, and we actually did get pictures.
I did, and that will probably go along good with like video editing and that whole, you know, we can do like a media sort of thing for the next show.
Right, and we'll have to actually have the pictures up by then.
Yeah.
A nice little write up there, and
mm-hmm.
we'll talk about the setup next week.
That'd be good. That'd be good.
Man, any other words?
That's it, I think.
Anything from you, Alan?
Anything from the rest of you? All right, well, you know, just as a thank you again for everybody for listening to our 5 shows now that we have, and thank you, and catch us again on...
I'm proud of that. All right. I think it's great, too. You know what would be nice?
What's that?
We say this every week.
Hmm.
When we get off the air and we pack everything up and we're downstairs and you're just about to leave, and I usually say to you, man, we got to get together and put some more stuff together.
Yep.
And it ends up, you know, I wake up the next day and it's already Tuesday. So
mm-hmm.
what the heck are we going to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully time won't be going as fast anymore.
Yep.
But thank you for listening. This is Dan.
And this is Link.
Signing off, and we appreciate it, and we'll see you next week.
Good night.
Bye.
Linux Link Tech Show. Pulling the Slink Tech Show.